In 1991, an up-and-coming new musician, new singer, came out with a song. And he started out telling the story of he and his wife were at a football game, and they ran into somebody who used to be his girlfriend, his old girlfriend. And he kind of reflected on, as he was growing up, how he would pray that she would become his wife. And if God would give him that, then he would do everything rest of his life right. Well, when he meets this woman, he realizes over time that they had both changed. And he looked at his own wife and realized that he was very fortunate to have not had that answered. This was Garth Brooks, 1991, when he first became a country singer, or a big one. And it was called Unanswered Prayers. Now, we do recognize several ways that God responds to our prayers. Before I say this, let me say that I was working on a sermon, this message for about 2 weeks, and I was talking about the flesh of the Spirit, and I was staying in Romans 8 the whole time, and just something didn't feel right about it. I don't know why, and we don't really talk about what we're doing. We never call each other and see, but I'm glad I killed that because it would have been a rehash of what Eric just did. So for some reason, this just felt right, and I took one from about 4 or 5 years ago and kind of reworked it a little bit. But this is about how God does answer our prayers, but sometimes they're not answered the way we want. They are what we would call unanswered prayers. There are many ways that He responds. It may be a quick and simple yes, and it's obvious that He did answer this prayer. Sometimes He'll say yes, but only after we have learned a certain lesson or we have waited patiently. Other times it may be positive, but it's not the yes we expected. It came out of left field, some weird circumstance that answers the prayer in a different way than we expected. He will answer a prayer, but it's not always yes. There are circumstances where it will be no. But there's also one, and this is the most challenging one for us, I think, and He will say, I will answer it, but only after you repent. And you must go through some trials to there. And again, it may not be the answer we want. Yes, it could be a different way that He answers it than what we just expect, this straight up yes or no answer. We don't always get that. Let's turn to Matthew 7. About the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 7 and verses 7 through 11. Matthew 7 verses 7 through 11 said, "Ask and it shall be given you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asks receives, and he that seeks finds, and to him that knocks it shall be opened. Or what man is there of you, whom if his son asks for bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent?" And then here's the key verse, verse 11. "If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father, which is in heaven, give good things to them that ask him?" There's a very key word in there. And that is give good things, the word good. Give good things to him, them that ask. Now, God's definition of good may not always be exactly what our definition of good is. We'll look at that. I'd like to look at 7 points today that kind of explain how sometimes when God gives us what we consider an unanswered prayer, how it is probably what is best for us. First point is the response that God has may not be the one we want. And Eric, this is just called unanswered prayers, if you need that. So, the response that God has may not be the one we want. Again, look at verse 11 where it says He gives good things. How many times have our children asked us for something that they really think they need, but we know they shouldn't? You don't need a dirt bike when you're 4 years old. I remember asking my dad for one when I was about 5. He would have never spent money on that, but he also knew that I would have broken my neck within 2 months. We may also pray for something that we think we need, but God knows that that's not something that we need at this time. I noticed Powerball and Mega Millions are both up in the, they're real high right now, several hundred million dollars each. I remember a guy at the feast one year talking about, oh, I pray to win the lottery every time. Well, which might solve some of his financial issues, but how many problems are there with winning a lottery? I just want to give you a few examples today. Those that win a, quote, jackpot, which is a jackpot that's considered $1 million or more, they're about 50% more likely to be divorced and over 50% more likely to become bankrupt within 5 years. God knows what's good for us. Let me give you a few stories about lottery winners. 1985 and 1986, Evelyn Adams won the lottery, equaling a total of $5.4 million. Now she has no money. She won not once, but she won twice. This. She won $2.8 and $2.6 million. She lost this within 4 years, and she lived in a trailer and lost all of her relatives and friends because when the money ran out, they all left her. A guy named William Post, he won $16.2 million in the Pennsylvania lottery. 4 years later, he lived on Social Security. His girlfriend sued him for a share of his winnings, and one of his brothers was arrested for hiring a hitman to kill him, hoping to inherit a share of the winnings. His relationship with his other siblings strained immediately because he would not give them money, and he spent some time in jail. Doesn't say why he spent time in jail. Within 1 year of the time he won it, he was $1 million in debt, declaring bankruptcy, and now he lives on $450 a month and food stamps. There are so many on here, I'm just looking through. Here's a woman that in 2006, she won $4 million in the Virginia lottery. Rather than wait to get the money, because I guess apparently it takes a few months to get it in, some loan company offered to give her $300,000 up front, but they charged her 40-something percent interest, kind of a loan shark deal. Well, she immediately spent all of the money, and she never was able to pay them back. She ended up losing everything she had, and she also lost her son because she could not afford to pay his medical bills within a year of the time she got this money. Guy in Chattanooga, he split. He went to Georgia before we had a lottery. He split $20 million lottery with another, apparently another couple from Georgia. So he had $10 million. Well, he worked at a car dealership in Chattanooga. So he went to the owner and bought the car dealership. Probably paid way too much. He immediately fired all the managers. No doubt he didn't like them because he worked for them. And he put all of his friends who were mechanics back in the back in charge of the car lot. Within 2 years, he had lost it. They had foreclosed. He had lost it. And when asked by a reporter, he said the only reason that he lost it was because he had to split that $20 million with the people in Georgia. He would have been okay if he'd had the other half of it. And apparently, didn't learn from that. There's a guy named Henry. Is it Henry? I popped it up here. Let me see. David Edwards, 58 years old. He won one of the Powerball jackpots. He won $27 million. He lived in Kentucky. And I remember seeing him on one of these How Lottery Changed Your Life or something shows. And he immediately moved to Palm Springs, or not Palm Springs. What's the one in Florida? Is it Palm Beach? West Palm Beach. Well, he moved down there, bought a $6 million house. He bought two Bentleys, bought a couple of Ferrari-type sports cars, and he even bought a $1.5 million jet. And he had a huge crack habit anyway, Well, now that he has this money, he didn't have to take crack anymore. He could start taking cocaine, things like that. So on the TV show, he was bragging this came from King something, all of this stuff in his house. I mean, it was ridiculous looking stuff. It's stuff that we say is ridiculous. Well, within a year and a half, he owed taxes. He did not pay any of the taxes in that year and a half time. They started to foreclose on him. He ended up losing the entire house. He lost all of the cars. And within 1.5 years of winning $27 million, he was living in a storage building where his, I hate to be gross here, but his facilities were inside the storage building in a box in the corner. And he lived in a 12-by-12 storage building. He ended up dying within another 6 months of the time he lived there. So sometimes the answer that God gives us is probably the answer we want. I don't know that God thinks we should be winning lotteries or things like that. If we need that, maybe we're not asking for the right things. Second point, God will answer one way or another if it's heartfelt. God will answer one way or another if it is heartfelt. One way or another does not necessarily mean yes. It could be a, quote, unanswered prayer. In the New Testament, we see a lot of examples of answered prayers. Matthew 14, verse 30. Let's just go there. Matthew 14, verse 30. We know this story. This is the story of Peter walking on water, and then he begins to realize that people are not supposed to walk on water. So he was beginning to lose his faith a little bit. And verse 30 said, when he saw the wind blowing, he was afraid and began to sink. He cried, saying to God, save me, save me. Now, what was Christ's response to him? Did he say, no, never mind, you're just going to drown? No, he didn't. But he stretched out his hand and he caught him. And in verse 31, he says, you have little faith, why did you doubt? He was walking on water, and then something clicked, as Eric talked about the works of the flesh. He no longer has that faith in God, and he begins to realize people aren't supposed to do this. And Christ had to tell him, you have little faith, why did you doubt? You know, when someone cries out to God, he will intervene. Even if, like Peter, and sometimes most of us, sometimes you have little faith, but he will help in some way. It may not always be the answer you want, but he may use this intervention to help increase our faith. Look at what it says right after that. When they got into the boat, the wind stopped. Then those who were in the boat came and worshipped him, saying, because of what they had just witnessed, truly you are the Son of God. So an instance like this, that shows other people that yes, you are the Son of God. Gives an example for other people, even without our faith sometimes. There's a story about prayer that ties into this point. I guess it's more of a joke, I guess you'd say. But it says, a priest, a minister, and a guru sat down discussing the best positions for prayer while a telephone repairman worked nearby. Kneeling is definitely the best way to pray, the priest said. No, said the minister, I get the best results standing with my hands outstretched to heaven. You're both wrong, the guru said. The most effective prayer position is lying down. The repairman could contain himself no longer. Hey, fellas, he interrupted. The best praying I ever did was hanging upside down from a telephone pole. You know, a truly heartfelt prayer will be answered one way or another. But again, and I'm going to stress this time and time again, it may not always be the answer that we think we should have. It may not always be the answer we want. But it is the answer that God believes, whether it's an unanswered prayer because we're praying for something we shouldn't have, or any other case, It's what God believes that we need. Point number three is trials make us stronger. Trials make us stronger. Isaiah 64, verse 8. Sermonette I had a few weeks ago, I talked about this, but Isaiah 64, verse 8 says, "But now, O Lord, you are our Father, we are the clay, and you are potter, and we all are the work of your hand." Now, here are the steps to creating a piece of pottery. If you ever have the chance in Gatlinburg, it's not right on the strip, you can go up to a craft circle. You have to turn on the bypass, 331? And go up, and there's a circle up there of many places that make different crafts. And there are several pottery, pottery villages where they create different pieces of pottery. You can watch them work the whole time. It's real fascinating. I enjoy watching that kind of stuff. I wish I was good at that. It's just not very artistic. But the steps to creating a piece of pottery, the first one, the clay has to be pure. Impurities will cause it to crumble when it's heated, and it will not be a piece of pottery that can be used. Now, are we pure when we come to God with these prayers? Or do we have all these impurities inside us that God needs us to work out before we realize what some of these prayers that we're asking for, whether they're right or wrong? Second step to creating pottery, the clay must be centered when it's put on a pottery wheel. It has to be centered in the middle of the wheel. If it's sideways, the centrifugal force will force one side to be off balance. So you have to have it centered. Now, same way with God. Is our piece of clay or our human body, are we centered around God? We have that piece of clay that he can work with because we're focused entirely on him. Third part, the potter's hands end up creating this. The potter's hands will mold the piece of clay, and sometimes it requires pressure. And it sometimes, as we've seen, the pressure might be a little more than we like sometimes. But if God's our potter, there will be pressure. And are we that flexible that we allow God to work with us? What is it? Malleable, I guess, is the word. Can we be worked with because we allow God to do that? Fourth one, the piece of clay, once it's created, it has to sit out and dry for a while. All of the water has to be removed from it in order for it to be heated. If the water's not removed, it will crack when it's put into fire. And the fifth part, it's placed into a kiln, which heats up very intense heat, and it strengthens the piece and allows it to be used. From then on, you can cook with it, put whatever you need in it, and it's going to be strong. Same way with our lives. These trials sometimes seem very harsh, but God tests us by fire sometimes. So these trials only make us stronger. The fourth point. We can learn from an unanswered prayer. We can learn from an unanswered prayer. Let's look at Job as an example. Job 1, if you will. Scary thought. Job 1 and verse 8. And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that fears God and eschews evil? Now God himself states, there's none like him on earth. There are none like him on earth. You would think that someone like this would give a prayer to God and it would be answered immediately. He goes, hey, it says Matthew 7. But again, it's for your own good is what God says. He'll give you good things. Yet Job lost all of his children. He lost all of his possessions. And that was not enough. He was then given a physical ailment. Do you think Job was praying to God at this time? Please remove this stuff. There's no doubt he was praying. But God needed Job to learn a lesson. It's interesting that God allowed Satan to test Job. One little aspect, and I can look at my life and think, I'm not even close to Job. If my only problem was self-righteousness, I'd have it made, I feel. But it got a lot more problems than that. But God allowed who he considered the greatest person on earth to be tested at that time. Is there a lesson that we need to learn when we go to God and ask him to give us something? Is there a lesson that we need to learn before God answers that prayer? Or just simply an unanswered prayer where he doesn't think we need it? When we think God's not listening, it would be wise to remember that Job was someone God considered the greatest person on earth, and he still did not listen when Job asked him at times. He had to be confused because he did everything God asked him to, and yet God did not answer these prayers at that time. He made him suffer terribly. I don't know that any of us have ever gone through what Job had to. We've all faced trials, but nothing like Job had to. Let's go to the end of Job 42. Let me read verses 3 through 6. Job 42, verses 3 through 6. Job finally comes to realize what he had to learn. Verse 3. Who is he that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not things too wonderful for me, which I knew not. Here I beseech you, and I will speak. I will demand of you, and declare thou unto me. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear. Now mine eyes have seen you. And verse 6 is where he finally learns, wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. So it took all of this for who God himself said was the greatest person on earth to actually have this prayer answered. It was unanswered up to this point because Job needed to learn a lesson. Point number 5, I said this already, God will not answer yes to every prayer. Now, it seems like Matthew 7 says this. However, that verse 11 says he will give us good things. And again, depends on how you define good things. Good things could be, in some people's eyes, $5 million today to do whatever you want. But I think God does not want that for us. I remember an old man that used to live with my parents. They kind of kept him in. A very wealthy man. He had a lot of money. He had no family. Probably kind of miserable person, but he's very wealthy. And he always had a saying that if you wanted to ruin someone, give them more than they can handle. And I think that's true. So God will not always answer yes to every prayer. He knows what's good for us. He does not know. He does not sit here and give us whatever we want. Let's go to Romans 8. We got into Romans 8 a little bit. Romans 8 and verse 28. Go 28 through 30. It says, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to His purpose. For whom He did foreknow, He also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of His Son, that He might be the firstborn among many brethren. Verse 30, moreover, whom He did predestinate, them He also called. And whom He called, them He also justified. And whom He justified, them He also glorified." Everything we ask for may not be the good that verse 28 is talking about. Verse 28 talks about for the good of them. We may not understand that even some health issues, things like that, that look at what Job went through. He had to go through that to realize that. God's answers to things may be something that in this lifetime we will never understand. Talked about a few weeks ago when my nephew was in the hospital. That's the hardest, I have no doubt, that our whole family ever prayed. And yet those prayers were not answered in the way that we wanted. It's hard, but you come to realize that this is going to happen to everyone at some point. You just don't want it to happen with young people before older. It's hard. But we also have to realize that there's time and chance. Let's go to Ecclesiastes 9, speaking of time and chance. Ecclesiastes 9, verses 11 and 12. Solomon's dark periods, but you can learn a lot from Ecclesiastes. Verse 11 says, "I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happens to them all." Verse 12, "For man also knows not his time. As the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them." Time and chance is going to happen to everyone. It may not always be pleasant, but if this was not the case, we could ask God to allow us to live forever. He would grant it. Who would want to live forever? I'm not that old, but I realize as I get older that death is not going to be as bad as it is when you think you're 20 years old. You don't want to die. You realize who would want to live over and over and over. Time and chance happens to everyone. Point number 6, answers will be revealed to us at the end time. When it's all over, we can find out why this happened, why that happened. Answers will be revealed to us at the end time. God does not have to reveal the reasons for things that have happened. He doesn't answer to us. We will answer to Him. Ecclesiastes shows again, time and chance can happen to anyone. You don't have to turn there, but Daniel 12, verses 8 and 9. Daniel 12, verses 8 and 9 say, "Although I heard, I did not understand. Then I said, My Lord, what shall be the end of these things?" Daniel had just seen all these visions and did not understand what was going on. And God told him, "Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed to the time of the end." Now, do we have these visions figured out in the church? Sometimes we think we do. Sometimes we wonder. Perhaps we do. Perhaps we're way off. But as it says, they're sealed till the time of the end. We may be in the end times and we may have that figured out. We may not. We think we're close. But this tells us that the answers to this will be revealed at the end time. Maybe after when Christ establishes His kingdom, we can find out answers to why did you let someone die? Why did you allow cancer to take this one, that one? I don't believe that God tells Satan that any of us are the most righteous people on the earth. And yet, God allowed Job to be tested. Why would he not allow us to be tested now? And again, we can ask that if we do qualify. We've still got work to do. I know I do. But if we knew what the answers were to these prayers each time, we wouldn't have the need for faith, would we? If we knew God was going to answer every prayer, why would we need faith? We're just asking it would happen. Well, there are times when we have to find out whether our faith is strong enough to withstand a, quote, unanswered prayer. Number 7 gets into it. Faith is required when we do not receive the answer we want. Faith is required when we do not receive the answer we want. Luke 17, verse 6. Luke 17, verse 6. And I've never seen anyone that can accomplish this, so don't know that our faith is where Christ talks about. So the Lord said, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, be pulled up by the roots and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. Now, it's very hard to have this faith when we have prayed and those prayers do not become answered. Mr. Keller's, I remember telling the story. Was that you, Debbie? The horrible birth? I don't mean it that way, but was it you or Fred? David. First one. David, his delivery was very hard. Mr. Keller's has told this several times in different sermons. And he would pray that God would protect his wife and his baby. Come back, and it's the same thing, over and over and over. And it was an unanswered prayer. It would not happen. And he was afraid to possibly lose both of them. It was only when he said, they're in your hands. And this takes a lot of faith to ask God, if you need to take them, take them. But to say they're in your hands and you do what needs to be done, that's when God granted what was needed and David was born and Miss Keller's was fine at that time. Very, very hard to do that. That takes a lot of faith. To put it in God's hands when it's your family. I know I certainly didn't when Zach died. I prayed and prayed that he would be okay. Never thought, did I have the faith? No, I don't think so. To say, okay, it's in your hands. Because we didn't want that answer. We didn't want that answer that he gave. But only when you face these unanswered prayers and put faith in God there, that's where you build that relationship with God. I want to finish this with just a poem, and we'll conclude. The author is unknown to this, but it's titled Unanswered Prayer. It says, I asked for strength that I might achieve. I was made weak that I might learn humbly to obey. I asked for health that I might do greater things. I was given infirmity that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I might be happy. I was given poverty that I might be wise. I asked for power that I might have the praise of men. I was given weakness that I might feel the need of God. I asked for all things that I might enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy all things. I got nothing that I had asked for, but everything that I had hoped for. Almost despite myself, my unspoken prayers were answered. I am, among all men, most richly blessed.